At Market District, we believe in the power of great taste, like juicy heirloom tomatoes, cheesy house-made pizza, and fresh artisan-made bread. From produce to meats to chef-made meals, discover great taste at Market District.
Hanging out at the pool is great. Relaxing and playing Vegas-style games on my phone at the same time. Drink in one hand and a blackjack in the other. It's all at SpinQuest. Over 1,000 games, including your favorite slots and table games. Be cool with this summer special. New players get $30 coin packs for 10 at SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Epochs. Hello and welcome back to Epochs. If you remember, we were right in the middle of a series talking all about Constantine the Great, Constantine the First. And we talked all about the generation before him and the age of Diocletian and Maximian and Galerius and the various emperors, his father Constantius and the Tetrarchy, the rule of four emperors. Finally, last time, if you remember, we were getting into Constantine himself, finally, that his father, Constantius, the emperor in the West, he'd only been the senior emperor, the Augusti in the West for a brief period, less than 2 years. He was up in Britain, Roman Britannia, was up in York when he died of natural causes, and that Constantine wasn't supposed to be the next emperor. The emperor who really should have picked it was Galerius out in the East, in the Eastern Roman world, half the world away. In the Roman world, but Constantine's men and the people of Britain, if you believe the accounts, had proclaimed him emperor, and so Galerius was obliged to accept that, at least for now. And if you remember where we left off the story last time, sort of in almost in the middle of events, so let's pick up directly from there, just a little bit to say exactly where we were. There was one of the more junior emperors in the West called Maxentius, who was the son of the old Maximian. Hopefully you'll remember all these names. Hopefully you're not just coming to this episode without watching the previous ones. So you remember Diocletian's original co-emperor was Maximian, a badass general's general type dude. He'd been forced to retire when Diocletian decided he wanted to retire. Anyway, his son Maxentius had been ruler in the West, and Constantine's people, his soldiers, had proclaimed him as Augusti, senior emperor in the West. Can't have two of those. So Galerius, even though he didn't want Constantine at all, said, okay, look, you can be emperor. You'll have to be the junior Caesar. You can't be the senior Augusti. Okay, and so Maxentius is supposed to be ruling in Italy. But he himself was a bit of a usurper, who's supposed to be the most senior emperor now, who's ruling in the East. Because even though there's four emperors, there's still a hierarchy, right? You've got two senior ones, the Augusti, two junior ones, the Caesars. But of the two Augusti, there is a more senior one of the two still, right? In the age of Diocletian, it was Diocletian. Maximian was supposed to be a co-ruler with him. On paper, nominally, absolutely the same level of power. But in reality, Diocletian was the senior one. Well, now Galerius is the most senior one. Galerius is the most powerful man in the Roman world. And his pick to be the senior Augusti in the West, right, if it's not going to be Constantine, he'll allow Constantine to be emperor, but only as the junior Caesar. So who is the senior Augusti in the West, ruling from Italy usually, perhaps from Rome or Ravenna itself? Well, Galerius wants this Severus. Remember, we were talking about Severus. But Maxentius, Maximian's son, sort of claimed it for himself. And that the people of Rome, the actual city of Rome itself, and the senatorial class, for what it's worth, and the Praetorian Guard in Rome, for what it's worth, at this point in time, not anywhere near what it used to be, but still for what it's worth, backed Maxentius, as did his own father, Maximian, coming out of retirement, kind of, a bit. Not completely officially, but still, nonetheless, he's on the scene. So, looks like there's going to be a showdown between Maxentius, the usurper, and Galerius's actual pick to be the Augusti in the West, Severus. Okay, I should be reading from Edward Gibbon's The Decline and Fall of the Roman Empire, and we'll let him pick up the story, because he's a great storyteller, a great writer. The prose is amazing. Okay, he says this, quote, "According to the advice, or rather the orders, of his colleague, the Emperor Severus immediately hastened to Rome in the full confidence that by his unexpected celerity, he should easily suppress the tumult of an unwarlike populace commanded by a licentious youth." That licentious youth is this Maxentius we were talking about, the son of Maximian, and that the people of Rome nowadays, in the late 3rd century we're talking about, by now an unwarlike people, used to luxury and pomp. But he found on his arrival the gates of the city shut against him, the walls filled with men and arms, an experienced general at the head of the rebels, and his own troops without spirit or affection. A large body of Moors deserted to the enemy, allured by the promise of a large donative money. And if it be true that they had been levied by Maximian in his African war, preferred the natural feeling of gratitude to the artificial ties of allegiance, i.e. a big body of Moors, North Africans, were ultimately loyal to Maximian, and therefore Maxentius's usurpation, rather than Severus. So that's bad. Not going well for Galerius's pick. And goes on. Anulianus, the Praetorian prefect, declared himself in favour of Maxentius, and drew after him the most considerable part of the troops accustomed to obey his commands. Rome, according to the expression of an orator, recalled her armies, and the unfortunate Severus, destitute of force and of counsel, retired, or rather fled, with precipitation to Ravenna in northern Italy. Here he might have for some time been safe. The fortifications of Ravenna were able to resist the attempts, and the morasses, swamps, that surround the town were sufficient to prevent the approach of the Italian army, which Severus commanded with a powerful fleet, secured him an inexhaustible supply of provisions, and gave a free entrance to the legions which, on the return of spring, would advance to his assistance from Illyricum and the east. Because Galerius wants this guy, Severus. He doesn't want Maxentius and, by extension, Maximian. So he's going to be prepared to send provisions and supplies and even armies from the east. Gibbon goes on saying, Maximian, who conducted the siege in person, the siege of Ravenna, where Severus was holding up, was soon convinced that he might waste his time and his army in the fruitless enterprise, and that he had nothing to hope either from force or famine. Yeah, Ravenna is known, the fortress city of Ravenna is known, famously, as almost impossible to take by siege. Can't really besiege it because of the geography. Perhaps we'll go into the detail of that at a later time. For centuries, that was the case. Okay. With an art more suitable to the character of Diocletian than to his own, he directed his attack not so much against the walls of Ravenna as against the mind of Severus. The treachery which he had experienced disposed that unhappy prince to distrust the most sincere of his friends and adherents. The emissaries of Maximian easily persuaded his credulity that a conspiracy was formed to betray the town, and prevailed upon his fears not to expose himself to the discretion of an irritated conqueror, but to accept the faith of an honourable capitulation. He was at first received with humility and treated with respect. Maximian conducted the captive emperor to Rome and gave him the most solemn assurances that he had secured his life by the resignation of the purple, that Severus could obtain only an easy death and an imperial funeral. When the sentence was signified to him, the manner of executing it was left to his own choice. He preferred the favourite mode of the ancients, that of opening his veins, and as soon as he expired, his body was carried to the sepulchre which had been constructed for the family of Gallienus. And his father, Maximian, the real power, couldn't really have Severus still running around being alive. Whilst he was, it would always be a standard for their enemies to rally around, and Galerius would always claim that he's the legit emperor. So while he lived, their power couldn't be secure, so he had to go. Though the characters of Constantine and Maxentius had very little affinity with each other, their situation and interest were the same, i.e. trying to secure power for themselves on not necessarily the most perfect and legit legal basis, and Galerius not being happy with them. Neither of them are Galerius's pick. And prudence seemed to require that they should unite their forces against the common enemy, that's both barbarians and Galerius. Notwithstanding the superiority of his age and dignity, the indefatigable Maximian passed the Alps and, courting a personal interview with the sovereign of Gaul, carried with him his daughter Fausta as the pledge of the new alliance, the alliance between Maximian and his son, nominally the actual emperor, Maxentius, and Constantine, and marry his daughter to Constantine. Gibbon tells us that the marriage was celebrated at Arles with every circumstance of magnificence, and the ancient colleague of Diocletian, this Maximian, father of Maxentius, who again asserted his claim to the Western Empire, conferred on his son-in-law, Constantine, and ally the title of Augustus. That's weird. Isn't his own son supposed to be the Augustus? Isn't Constantine just supposed to be the Caesar? But now Maximian himself is saying Constantine is the Augustus in the West. It's getting more and more complicated, isn't it? More and more people claiming the most senior roles for themselves. Gibbon continues by saying, by consenting to receive that honour of the Augusti from Maximian, Constantine seemed to embrace the cause of Rome and of the Senate, i.e. against Galerius and the Eastern Roman world at this point. But his professions were ambiguous and his assistance slow and ineffectual with helping Maximian and Maxentius in any and all troubles they might have in Italy. He said he would help them out, but his assistance was slow and ineffectual. He considered with attention the approaching contest between the masters of Italy and the emperor of the East, and was prepared to consult his own safety or ambition in the event of the war. Got to put himself first and his armies first, really. Galerius is not going to want Maximian through Maxentius to be ruler in the West, or Constantine. He can't really have either of those guys basically ruling half of the empire he considers his, because they're not going to play ball. They've set up flags in their own right. They're going to do what they want when they want, not take any orders from him. So Galerius isn't going to want that. So there may well be a war. Well, there will be a war, a civil war again, back to the dark days of the crisis of the third century. You know, all of Diocletian's work of creating this tetrarchy falling apart, these four men that will all work in unison, will all be singing from the same hymn sheet at the same time, will be as of one mind on policy at all times. No, that's falling apart very quickly. All right. Gibbon goes on telling us this, quote, "The importance of the occasion called for the presence and abilities of Galerius. At the head of a powerful army collected from Illyricum and the East, he entered Italy, resolved to revenge the death of Severus and to chastise the rebellious Romans, or, as he expressed his intentions, in the furious language of a barbarian, to extirpate the Senate and to destroy the people by the sword," the people of Rome itself. "But the skill of Maximian had concerted a prudent system of defence. The invader, Galerius, the Roman emperor in the East, is nominally supposed to be the ruler of the whole Roman world, really, is invading Italy and trying to attack Rome itself. But we're told that Maximian is an old soldier. We're told the invader, Galerius, found every place hostile, fortified, and inaccessible. And though he forced his way as far as Narni, within 60 miles of Rome, his dominion in Italy was confined to the narrow limits of his camp. Sensible of the increasing difficulties of his enterprise, the haughty Galerius made the first advances towards a reconciliation and dispatched two of his most considerable officers to tempt the Roman princes by the offer of a conference and the declaration of his paternal regard for Maxentius, who might obtain much more from his liberality than he would hope from the doubtful chance of war. The offers of Galerius were rejected with firmness. His perfidious friendship refused with contempt, and it was not long before he discovered that unless he provided for his safety by a timely retreat, he had some reason to apprehend the fate of Severus. The wealth which the Romans defended against his rapacious tyranny, they freely contributed for his destruction." So let's just take note of what happened there. Galerius, the emperor of the East, decided he couldn't have Maximian and Maxentius running around in Italy, in central Europe, being their own masters. So he tried to invade Italy, got within 60 miles of Rome, realized it wasn't going well for him. He wouldn't win this war. So sued for peace, sued for at least sitting down and having a conference and talking Turkey, trying to get some sort of agreement in place, and was firmly told, no, you just tried to invade us. And now you can't play, you won't win. So why should we sit down with you and make a peace deal with you? No, in fact, you best turn tail and run away now. Otherwise we will beat you and kill you. So terrible reversal for Galerius. Only like 2 years before, 3 years before, he thought he had everything sewn up. He thought he would be the sole ruler, really, nominally, or de facto, he would be the sole ruler of the entire Roman world. Now, well, he's basically lost half the Roman world. It doesn't obey any of his commands or anything at all. He will have to turn tail and flee Italy for his life, basically. Gibbon goes on telling us this. The name of Maximian, the popular arts of his son, the secret distribution of large sums, and the promise of still more liberal rewards checked the ardour and corrupted the fidelity of the Illyrian legions, the ones that are supposed to be loyal to Galerius. And when Galerius at length gave the signal of the retreat, it was with some difficulty that he could prevail on his veterans not to desert a banner which had so often conducted them to victory and honour. So Galerius just about got out of that situation. He came very, very, very close to his own men just completely turning against him whilst still in Italy. And, well, it would have been all over for him at that point. It probably almost certainly would have just been murdered by them. Very, very narrowly escaped Galerius there at that point in time. Gibbon continues saying this. A contemporary writer assigns two other causes for the failure of the expedition, but they are both of such a nature that a cautious historian will scarcely venture to adopt them. We are told that Galerius, who had formed a very imperfect notion of the greatness of Rome by the cities of the East with which he was acquainted, found his forces inadequate to the siege of that immense capital. But the extent of a city serves only to render it more accessible to the enemy. Rome had long since been accustomed to submit on the approach of a conqueror, nor could the temporary enthusiasm of the people have long contended against the discipline and valour of the legions. We are likewise informed that the legions themselves were struck with horror and remorse, and that those pious sons of the Republic refused to violate the sanctity of their venerable parent. But when we recollect with how much ease, in the more ancient civil wars, the zeal of party and the habits of military obedience had converted the native citizens of Rome into her most implacable enemies, we shall be inclined to distrust this extreme delicacy of strangers and barbarians who had never beheld Italy till they entered it in a hostile manner. I.e., what Edward Gibbon is saying there in a late 18th century roundabout way. He's saying that some historians have said that when Galerius and his Eastern legions entered Italy and came within 60 miles of Rome, suddenly they got cold feet and they're like, oh, we can't try and attack and sack Rome or do anything bad to Rome because it's the mother city. It's like, you know, it's the font of our whole civilization, and it would just be wrong and impious, and we can't do that. That they suddenly decided that when they got within 60 miles of Rome. And Gibbon saying, yeah, I don't believe that. Medieval historians have said that's a thing, a possibility that might have happened, but Gibbon just doesn't believe it. Romans, much less Eastern Romans who had never even been to Italy or seen Rome, Romans, for centuries and centuries, had no real qualms on marching on their own city, partially burning it down, killing loads of their own citizens. The Romans hadn't had a problem with that for really 4 centuries, since the age of Sulla and Marius, really. So don't tell me Galerius's legions suddenly got cold feet. Okay, anyway, an interesting note. Gibbon continues telling us this. Had they, Galerius's Eastern legions, not been restrained by motives of a more interested nature, they would probably have answered Galerius in the words of Caesar's veterans. And then Gibbon quotes Caesar's veterans, who were supposed to have said this. If our general wishes to lead us to the banks of the Tiber, which is the river that runs through the middle of Rome, the Tiber, we are prepared to trace out his camp. Whatsoever walls he has determined to level to the ground, our hands are ready to work the engines. Nor shall we hesitate, should the name of the devoted city be Rome itself. End quote. Gibbon goes on saying, "These are indeed the expressions of a poet, but of a poet who has been distinguished and even censured for his strict adherence to the truth of history." And that's the ancient poet Lucan, by the way. Gibbon continues saying, "The legions of Galerius exhibited a very melancholy proof of their disposition by the ravages which they committed in their retreat. They murdered, they ravished, they plundered, they drove away the flocks and herds of the Italians. They burnt the villages through which they passed, and they endeavoured to destroy the country which it had not been in their power to subdue. During the whole march, Maxentius hung on their rear, but he very prudently declined a general engagement with those brave and desperate veterans." Yeah, the veterans of Illyricum particularly were considered very, very, very good and veteran, and, you know, knew their business and everything. So not to be trifled with unnecessarily. Gibbon says, "His father, Maxentius' father, Maximian, his father had undertaken a second journey into Gaul with the hope of persuading Constantine, who had assembled an army on the frontier, to join the pursuit and to complete the victory. But the actions of Constantine were guided by reason and not by resentment. He persisted, Constantine persisted, in the wise resolution of maintaining a balance of power in the divided empire, and he no longer hated Galerius when that aspiring prince had ceased to be an object of terror." So Maximian saying to Constantine, "Come and join us, we can finish off Galerius. Between us, we could march all the way to Antioch or wherever. Between us, we can conquer the Eastern Roman world. He just tried to conquer us, failed, quite badly failed. If we join up now, we could probably take him out. Let's do it." And Constantine says, "No, thanks. Not right now. It's a pass, I'm afraid. It's not that I don't necessarily want to, but it's not the right moment for me, Constantine. That's a bit of a gamble at this moment in time. So thanks for the offer, but it's got to be a no." We hope you enjoyed that video, and if you did, please head over to lotuseaters.com for the full unabridged video.
Giant Eagle, we believe in better, and that includes finding more ways to help you save. Because finding a good deal is everyone's deal. Because every dollar and every moment counts. On sale this season at Giant Eagle, you'll find lower prices on hundreds of favorites, like seedless grapes, ground beef, Giant Eagle American cheese, and more. Giant Eagle, because it matters. Limited time only through September 9, 2026. Prices and participation may vary. See store for details.
What's going on, everyone? It's Bluff here, and we're driving through the states in the Bluffmobile, and the best thing that we can do is play our favorite casino-style games on SpinQuest. They have over 1,000 games, including live dealer, blackjack, and craps, with tons of slots and unlimited options. You can get a $30 coin pack for just $10 for new users. Sign up today. Go to SpinQuest.com right now.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.